Testing 1, 2, 1, 2. Testing.
Ladies and gentlemen, I declare the General Council meeting open. We acknowledge the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land, and pay our respects to their elders, past and present. Everyone is advised that the audio of this General Council meeting will be recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website. I ask if any elected members anticipate a conflict of interest with any of the items. Councillor Crossland.
I have a conflict with the motion with notice from Councillor Hall regarding SA Police.
Seconded, Councillor Byram. All those in favour? That's carried. Thank you. Carried unanimously. No troublemakers here tonight. Committee recommendations. I invite you to look at the committee minutes on pages for the People and Culture Committee on page 22, the Infrastructure Committee on page 31, and I suggest that we move them as a block because this is just accepting the minutes. But I will give people an opportunity to ask questions if they wish. Move away. Councillor Crossland moving.
Yeah, I'm happy to move in a block as suggested.
Is that seconded? Councillor Byram. Now, did anyone wish to raise any matters arising? Then I'll put it to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Okay. Now we go to the business plan on page 39 of the agenda. This is one where I think it best if it comes as a question from the chair whether, having looked at that most recent draft, that is anyone going to be suggesting variations of wording? This is it. This is last chance. Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, just a clarification question. So the suggested wording on page 43, I believe it is that the wording that we're voting to put into the plan, the proposed wording?
Good question. So where it, on page 43 where it says proposed wording, those words would appear on the relevant page. The coloured pages, which actually has the draft for our consideration. I did have a question about that, so perhaps I could ask staff to comment. In the 2016-17 target, I have two questions, in fact. So the change from the previous draft, it suggested that instead of saying better manage traffic on George and Dwyer, that it talk about better manage traffic in Marion and Oaklands Park. So is there really any other issue that's intended to be picked up by that goal? So that's comparing page 43, the column on the left, under 2016-17. And is Erica Conway's going to answer?
Sorry.
No? Abby Dixon's
going to
answer?
Sorry, I just got distracted. What was the question?
The question is, the suggestion is to, rather than have a goal for the 2016-17 year, of better managing traffic on George Street and Dwyer Road. It's proposed to be better managed traffic in Marion and Oaklands Park. So my question is, what other sites are to be the subject of better management when, as far as I know, we've really only been talking about George Street and Dwyer Road?
My understanding was from the feedback that we got at when the draft business plan came up, that there was a request to make it broader than just George Street and Dwyer Road, so this keeps it more open in that whole precinct to Marion Historic Village, that we would manage better, look at options to better manage traffic in those areas.
Okay, another question there, the heading, and one can see it on at the bottom of page 52. So you've got the proposed new wording, I understand that, but the heading is Marion Historic Village Transformation. Now, the traffic management on George and Dwyer and even surrounding streets is not actually directly concerned with the Marion Historic Village Transformation. So I'm suggesting that title should probably just be taken out altogether.
We can do that, yep.
Thank you. Yes, please, Councillor Hull.
With the exception of George Street and Dwyer Road, what other streets in Marion and Oaklands Park are of concern to the administration with traffic management?
Through the Chair, I'm not sure if Councillor Telfer might want to add to the discussion, because this was feedback that we received at the last Council meeting in terms of suggested changes.
Councillor Telfer, do you want to assist?
Yes, please. To solve George and Dwyer, there has been for 6-8 years a Finnis Street Master Plan and streetscaping plan. And when we did the work to sort out George Street traffic, most of the work was in Finnis Street. So in putting this up, I was concerned that it included the work that may be necessary in Finnis Street to solve some of the George Street issues. So I was not, did not have in mind actually going broader with traffic management issues, just a solution that happens to be moving into some other streets like Dwyer Road. The solution included Crewe.
Right, yeah, I think that answers the question. So the intention's the same, or that is, it's the one problem, but the solution may encompass other streets in Marion or Oaklands Park.
Yes, but I am ever hopeful that the Finnis Street streetscaping initial plan is finally put into place. That's still out there.
It's out there. All right. Someone to move adoption with that. Ms Waits has something to raise, or
so
Ms Dixon?
Through to Chair, just to clarify, the draft appendix, so what we can do is, if Council's comfortable with all the suggestions in the body of the report, we'll copy them into the minutes, and Jamie has put that, has got that up on the screen, so that's got, yep, so just so there's clarity.
The heading will be deleted.
And the heading for Marion Historic deleted, yep.
Got a couple of others, but they're pretty minor. I might just come back in 3 years' time, I think. So, someone to move with those changes, Councillor Telfer? Is that seconded? Councillor Pfeiffer? All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried by majority. Thank you. we now have a business plan to carry us through the next 3 years. So that's great. Next item on page 66, Glenthorne Farm. Couple of questions I have before we get into this one. On page 67, towards the bottom of the page, says a copy of the Glenthorne Farm Community Vision is attached at Appendix 1. And it's not attached at Appendix 1, so how can that be explained?
Through the Chair, I think that's clearly a omission, and my apologies for that.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Valentine. While you're there, the other thing that I might point out is halfway down page 68, at the end of the chronology, it talks about Mayor Hannah having sought a briefing for Council from the Adelaide University, and it correctly says that a copy of that letter from 12th of July is appended. The comment in the report to us is that to date a briefing date has not been set. Now, my question is, has any response been received from the University of Adelaide? Because I haven't seen it.
Through you, Your Worship, no formal response to the letter has been received, but the CEOEA has been in contact this week with Adelaide University, who's promised that they'll get back to me with a proposed date to come and brief Council. Excuse me.
Okay, thanks. They are my questions. What can we do about making the... I guess this is a question maybe for the governance manager, but what can we do about making the Friends of Glenthorne Community Vision document available with this document or these minutes so that people have it as a reference point?
Through the Chair, yes, we can certainly include it as an appendices to the minutes and reference back to the report.
We don't need a motion for that. That can just be done administratively. Okay, wonderful. I think we're set to go. So, question, Councillor Holt?
Yeah, the appendix that's missing, can that be circulated now? Can we?
We did receive it. I can say we received it last year when we passed a motion in September, and it has a whole host of ideas. It would actually be available to us electronically somewhere, but no, we're talking about this meeting now, Mr. Scott. Councillor Byron. So would it be in the reports to the Infrastructure Committee? Mr. Valentine, do you recall, was it actually sent electronically as part of that agenda? If we have it electronically, then we can send it to everyone straight away. Those who are online. What I recall from the meeting in September last year is that hard copies were distributed to all elected members. So it doesn't seem to have been distributed as part of the agenda for the Infrastructure Committee recently, so I don't think we can easily lay our hands on it, Councillor Hull. I think there are, and I welcome a couple of members of Friends of Glenthorne Committee in the gallery. If you want to refer to them, they can probably supply you with a copy, but that's about as good as we can do on the spur of the moment. Oh, we have found an electronic copy, have we? Oh, good. Okay, so that's being emailed through, if you would like to refer to that in the course of debate. So, Councillor Byron to move. as printed, and did you wish to speak to that? Yeah, I have a seconder in Councillor Crossland, so feel free to go ahead.
Thank you, Your Worship, and I do want to acknowledge the friends of Glenthorne Farm who are here this evening. It's great to see them here. And they have done a great job at looking at what the community wants with Glenthorne Farm and asking for advice from the community, particularly with the community day they had last year. And they are actively still working on that in getting people's feedback continuously in the community. What I do want to say about this is that it is a very important piece of land within the city of Marion. And I think we're getting quite a name out and about there that we've had, they had a very successful community engagement strategy with the Oaklands Crossing. And we've also got a great joint project with the BMX with State and Onkapuinga. So what I am saying now is we need to now do this with Glenthorne Farm. Now is the time, and we need to ensure that the community's voice is heard, and we need to establish a working relationship with State and the university. So I think we really need to get this strategy going as to how we do this and really make the university aware that we really want to be part of this discussion in moving forward. So let's make this time now for us to move forward on this project. Thank you.
Councillor Crossland, did you wish to speak?
I'll just say a couple of words just to echo, first of all, what Councillor Byrom has said, and thank you to the friends of Glenthorne Farm for all their hard work. I think, really and truthfully, we're at the stage where this whole project has not moved forward. I'm very disappointed with the progress that's been made. I'm very disappointed with the fact that the deed that was signed by the university has not been followed. And I think we really need to up the game a little bit and bring the action to the uni to actually get something done. I acknowledge the hard work that the Glenthorne Farm people have done. The Vision Day was great. The community engagement's already been done for the university. There's a plan, there's a vision. All the things that the community would like to see there are all there, already done for them. So I support this motion for those reasons.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. And so it goes on. On to page 71, the service review framework and program. Again, I can start off with one or two questions. A query that I'd raised some time ago with staff is the criteria for assessing services of the council as being deserving or more urgent in terms of a service review. And we can see on page 85 there's a simple matrix. One of the axes is the value of the service measured against three factors. One can understand that. The other axis is called profile of the service based on what it does, who uses it, and resources used to provide it. Now, I have trouble understanding that as something that is measured. I'm not sure how you measure profile, so I'm after some elucidation of how that can be a measure which guides us to which services to review. Deb Horton's come up to answer that. Thank you.
Through the chair, there has been some. It's been noted that there has been some language that has been used with this scattergraph that we are open to your feedback to change. However, the profile of the service asked quite a few questions which related to budget, resources and strategic alignment, and evaluation and evidence of that information which was based on the first page of the service statements that were provided to staff to answer. So, for example, it asked questions if they didn't know who used the service, and if localised groups used the service, they got high values. They also got high values if there was no impact if the service was not fulfilled. If the service standard that they had wasn't being met, that was also given a high value. And if more than five departments were involved in the providing the service, that was also given a high scoring. Therefore, it meant there were more opportunities for that particular service to improve.
Okay, thanks for that. Any questions, members, before we go into this? Councillor Telfer?
I have a question that I'm putting in my own right, that on behalf of Councillor Gard. To get all infrastructure throughout the whole of the City of Marion to the same satisfactory standard, have fairness and equity processes been applied and demonstrated in the day-to-day works program as per March 2015 in observation of the governing sections Act 8H and L?
Well, there's a googly for you, Mr. Scott.
Through the chair, I'm not aware of the detail of the reference in the Act, but when we've assigned the program for the review, for the service reviews that we're doing, we've divided the program up considering the resources from each area that will be required. So, in fairness, we haven't put everything onto the operations area in one hit, for example. And I think that's what Councillor Gard and yourself are referring to, that the workload has been fairly allocated across the year of doing this, if I'm correct. I'm not sure if that's answering the question.
All right. Well, would someone like to move a motion? Councillor Blescu?
I just want to add a question.
Question?
I just want to know that we're approaching this in the most strategic manner, that we're looking at the stuff that will get the most bang for our buck as far as our organisation goes, and also that we are allocating our resources accordingly. So if there's something that it can possibly make an improvement of a few thousand dollars, are we going down that rabbit hole with expertise resources when we could be investigating ways to save money on things that are costing us several million dollars? And we may not find ways to save on those big ticket items, but they're the ones you need to do it. I guess what I've heard about your accounting is it's your really high transactions you've got to look at, and then obviously there's, you know, where things are undocumented at the really, really low level, but that's kind of petty cash. So
okay, I think we've got the question, Mr. Scott.
Through the chair, there are 131 services, and we picked those that are going to give us the biggest return. And I would actually mention to members that we're working with Council Solutions on an optimisation review as well for a period of 12 weeks. That's looking at the big ticket items and the big opportunities to spend from a holistic point of view. So that's in addition to the 12 or 13 service reviews that we've committed to in this report. But the question is, are we doing this in a way that's actually going to deliver efficiencies? Yes, we are, and the first year's efficiencies, I think, will be significant.
Thank you. Councillor Telfer?
My other question came up in Finance Committee, Audit and Finance. When we get these service review results, how are we going to cope with the results of the surveys, and can we fit in the results of the surveys to analyse them and move forward on them in a timely manner?
Through the chair, it's a hard question to answer when you don't know what the recommendations will be from the service review, but from experience so far and the reviews that we've done, the reviews have thrown up 20, 30 recommendations. And certainly there's going to be a whole host of opportunities that need to be considered in each of the 13 service reviews this year, plus the optimisation opportunities as well. So I can't say whether we're going to be able to do all of them because we don't know what's coming up, but there could be a lot of opportunity which could actually deflect resource as well.
And I have another question. Given that the service review analysis or the analysis of the surveys in fact gave rise to a top 19 services, and they're listed on page 99, and then the recommendation to council is that a different 13 services are recommended for review on page 103. I realise that there are reasons given in the table starting on page 98 for the 19 not all being selected, but the question is whether there's going to be any reworking of the survey material so that next time we do this the answers will give us the services which are actually most in need of review, rather than selecting 19 and then doing a different 12.
Through the Chair, we acknowledge that the tool device was overly complex, and we will be reviewing the information for the next service review prioritisation that will be coming to Council in 2017 to better align with the projects considered by elected members that may be important for a review.
Okay, thank you. Councillor Blisker.
And I see that's on the list in 103 as well, quite high up. So in Appendix 2, number 9, I'm just wondering whether we need to consider, and when we do the review, or change the timing for when the paid parking or the metered parking comes in at Marion Shops, because from memory, we get about $200,000 worth of parking fines from that facility. And also, so that'll be, I guess, a resource issue, but there will be subsequent external problems from parking management as well. So I don't know whether it's worth for us to wait to see what happens before reviewing the service, or do we try to predict and continue on the review. I'm unclear, and has that been considered? And what are people's thoughts?
Yeah, we're getting into quite a level of detail there. Who would like to address that among staff? Mr. Scholl.
Through the Chair, I can have a go at the answer, but it's going to be a little bit vague because we don't know when it's going to happen at Westfield. We actually met today with the Managing Director of the Westfield Marion and asked the question of when paid parking will be introduced and the boom gates installed, and he has no idea, and he wasn't able to tell us. So the question about whether we wait to do this review until that happens is a difficult one to answer, because we just don't know when it's going to happen. But it will certainly have an impact on resource, our resourcing, and the revenue that we get from parking.
All right. Looking for someone to move. Councillor Telfer.
Yes, I'll move per the recommendation.
Did you wish to speak to it?
Yes.
Well, I'll just check. Is it seconded? Councillor Hutchinson, go ahead, Councillor Telfer.
We're pleased to have this service review. We look forward to the results and grappling with the results. We meet a lot in forums and we do work towards the results. We understand that the first lot of 12 plus the library are spread over all sorts of different departments, so that the load is not heavy on one department. And we also appreciate that this is an extra load on staff over and above their day-to-day work, but it's wonderful that they are assessing from the inside out what's happening in our whole council, and we look forward to some good ideas on how we can do things better.
You, Councillor Hutchinson's fine. Anyone speaking against the motion? Then I'll put the motion. Those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you, councillors. So next we go to, thank you, Ms. Horton, and we go to page 109. Recreation Plaza, Oaklands Park, Stage 2, what I call a skate park. And everybody I know calls a skate park, but this is to do the extra bits, tables, bitumen and stuff. Question from Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, my question is connected with the roundhouse, whether it's developed or bulldozed. Can you just confirm that if we do endorse either option, one or two, that the work that we will be endorsing will not be changed in any way or damaged if the roundhouse is cleared from that site, or that it couldn't be done better planned without the roundhouse being there? I suppose really the question is, can we do things better if we wait and actually make a decision on the roundhouse? Because I'd rather bring that forward if that's the case, because developing around a derelict building is not always a good idea.
Ms. Cladham?
Through the chair, I can confirm that there'll be no impact to any future works around the roundhouse.
So the other part of the question is, if the roundhouse wasn't there, would you still be progressing these options as worded?
Yes. The only space that we're not addressing is the immediate area around the roundhouse, which could be addressed later.
Questions? Councillor Hull, then Councillor Blescu.
This is a question of great public interest, and it's been well covered by the media in the past. Councillor Croslin touched on it, and that is the roundhouse. We've got a very important meeting coming up, which I'll avail staff about, that we need to have the information to be equipped to take to the community because of the interest in it. And that is, has there been any update in regards to the Oaklands, the roundhouse at Oaklands Estate? If not, why not?
Who's going to answer that? Ms. Dixon, thank you.
Through the chair, so there's been numerous contacts with the minister's office, the most recent being today, and to date the minister is yet to consider council's request.
Councillor Blescu.
I guess my question is further to clarify what Councillor Crossland said. If the roundhouse has any work, be it improvement but more so removal, how would it be removed without going through the new area? So you have all these trucks coming through, and we see what they do to our pavements. We're going to, if council removes the roundhouse, you're going to have these heavy trucks full of bricks and all sorts of stuff driving through the park, and I guess you probably, you know, you, so that's going to, that is going to impact on the site. So yeah. Yes.
Through the chair. Access to any work would be through the service road, coming off Oaklands Road and down the western boundary of the site, past the proposed new car parking. There would be access only required through there for access to the roundhouse.
How many semis could you get side by side down through there?
Order, one question at a time, please. Ms. Cladham's just having a look at the map.
Through through the chair, if members refer to page 118, which is outlined option two, the access, any access to for vehicles associated with any future works would come down the road, or the service road indicated on that map on the western boundary.
If there are no more questions, Councillor Pryor.
If we were to look at option two, that goes into the unfunded initiatives list, so there's no immediate start on that. So we would probably have time, or would we probably have time to look at the options of the roundhouse in between starting option two and now, I guess.
Just to help you with that, Councillor Pryor, I can say that we have a forum booked where we're to look at the unfunded priorities list, I think in November. So I'll invite Ms. Clutterham to answer.
Through the chair, if members refer to page 116, the purple shaded area was the landscaping surrounding the roundhouse. The proposal is not to touch or plan any of that section until the determination around the roundhouse is reached.
Councillor Byrne has a question.
If we could refer to page 111. And before I ask my question, can I just say that stage one has been fantastic, and I know that the public love it. It's been a great initiative to get this going for particularly teenagers. And now on page 111, it does say, since the completion of stage one, there's been the comments made from the community for requesting further car parking. But then it states that that problem is specifically after work hours between 5 and 10, when the boom gate on the Parade West is closed. Has there been any suggestion of keeping that boom gate open until 10 o'clock, particularly with daylight saving coming up? Would that help us with our parking? And the second question related with that is, therefore, do we need to put as much parking in on the west if we can utilise that other parking more?
Through the chair.
Yep.
Residents are vehemently opposed to parking on the Parade West, particularly local residents, the impact that parking has on them after the hours of 5 and between 10 o'clock. So the proposals presented and the options look to address parking issues on the western side, to address the resident issues and provide parking for the facility users.
Interestingly, I can understand the concern after dark, but has any consideration been given to extending the hour at which the boom gate is shut, for example? I mean, would that be a balance of objectives during daylight savings, at least?
Sorry, you'd have to explain that a little bit further.
Well, I completely understand the problem for residents of having behind basically a thin line of trees a whole row of cars which might want to be parked, some of them for nefarious purposes, after dark. That's why the boom gate is there right at the beginning or before you can get to the parking. But in daylight savings, when it's light, one might expect more legitimate use of the car parks. So could the boom gate be, or the closing of the boom gate timing, be adjusted according to daylight hours and thereby increase parking for legitimate users while not disturbing the amenity of local residents?
Through the chair, that is possible, but I understand that wouldn't meet the needs of the residents along the Parade West.
Okay. Yeah, Ms. Byron? Yeah.
So, my understanding is that park that road that we're talking about has a row of trees and then a secondary road between them and the residents. So why are we treating this differently to any other park that we have in Marion?
I am sure that residents have expressed a strong view about it based on things that have happened in the past.
Yes, through the chair, that is correct. And also in the original master plan for the site, it did show some parking to the western side, which we've yet to undertake.
As I recall, I think it was in that region that Cherie turned that it was too, so there's a fair bit of feeling about it. Councillor Hull.
Question to the administration. With stage one, it would have had to have been the longest build for a state park in the world. And it's my understanding that stage one in its entirety, particularly when I went to the briefing along with the community, was never completed. And there was monies left over from that build. I'd like to know how much money was left over from stage one. Money is important to this debate. That would be, should be carried over to actually finish unfinished work. And I have an answer to that.
Ms. Clutter.
Yeah, through the chair, there's $64,000 savings as part of stage one, which we're proposing to utilise in stage two in the options presented.
Four?
Yes, it is.
Right. Still going on questions. We'll have to get to a motion soon. Councillor Crossland.
Sorry, yeah, just another clarification on the answers we've already had. So the road that you were talking about for access to get to the roundhouse looks to go through the proposed stage two, so it doesn't look as if that would be the access point straight through that service road in the middle of stage two. I can't see any other service road. So, yeah, I'm looking the western side on page 118, where it's got the shaded out area for Plaza Stage 2, with the service road running right through the middle.
Okay, Mr. Skull would like to comment.
Thank you, Your Worship. I think it's best shown on page 116, where it shows that the landscape surrounding the roundhouse won't be touched until such time as the roundhouse decision is made. So that western road would access to, I would presume, just past the pump room, and then the trucks, if they were demolishing, would have access just past that pump house to the back, which wouldn't be developed until the roundhouse.
Right. So it's within the purple dotted lines.
That's right.
Yeah. On the western side, on the right-hand side of the page.
And it's very complicated on page 118, so it's hard to see, but 116 is a lot easier.
Okay, Councillor Valescu.
Through the chair, that is the proposed access way. Part of option two is resurfacing the bitumen there. If option one is adopted, there'll be no upgrade or resurfacing done to the existing surface.
Okay. Would someone like to kick off the debate? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to move the recommendation, which includes option two, as printed on page 110. I do so in terms of this being unfinished business in a number of ways. I've already identified that option stage one was not completed, and in the report it does not really clearly indicate that that's a saving. It's indicated as a part of the budget. It is a saving. Okay, I think members need to be aware that that is unfinished work, and $64,000 of this proposal is already budgeted and should have been spent, but it hadn't for reasons that are best left alone. However, we've got an opportunity now to not only spend that $64,000 and finish off the work and meet the expectations of the community, because car parking was part of that community expectation, I can assure you that. And if I can touch very briefly on the issue of the car parking, maybe if I can have a discussion with Mr. Skull at a later time. We have got a meeting with the Oaklands Estate Residents Association coming up. Nathan and I have found that by going and discussing things with them and being collaborative, we may well be able to actually mitigate the issues with car parking. And I'd like to explore that, Mr. Mayor. Now, back to what I'm talking about. If we really see this reserve and the wetland and the skate park and everything else as the jewel in the crown for Marion, why wouldn't we look at this proposal? Why wouldn't we actually look at spending the money to actually improve the amenity? There are interesting trends happening there. There are weddings happening there now on a regular basis. It is a destination that people value, and they find it a very pleasant surrounding. Why wouldn't we optimise that? Why wouldn't we demonstrate to the South Australian Government, who are dragging their feet on the roundhouse, that we're committed to this site? Could you imagine the pressure that would place on the South Australian Government if we committed to this, when essentially, all bar the opportunity for trucks to get in quite easily, we're actually surrounding the roundhouse with beautifications and aesthetics, and it will be the pimple on the backside of this whole reserve. And it's all held up by the South Australian Government. Why wouldn't we do that? So that's my proposal, Mr. Mayor, that this reserve has been basically waiting for this. It's not something out of left field. It's been on the anticipation, on the bucket list for the administration and the council for some time.
Thank you, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, definitely. I have a few points to add.
Seconding the motion.
I'm seconding the motion. That's one of my points. The first thing is that we're only putting this onto the unfunded initiatives list at the moment. There's nothing more sinister than that. The second point is that if we were looking at $300 on a place base somewhere else, we would never get the infrastructure that we in place at Oaklands. We'd never get a toilet for that price. We'd never get all the fountains and everything else. So it makes sense to build on this. The land's there. It's available. It is a good use of our money, I'm sure.
That's it, thank you. Is anyone speaking against the motion? An amendment? Yes, Councillor Byrne.
Well, I'd like to ask a question regarding that amendment too, if I may. I want to go with option two, but I have a question in regards to option two, that 50% of the monies for option two is regarding the access road, some car parking, lighting and stormwater management. I'm wondering if option two can be put into two parts, so that we're dealing with the actual place-based type areas, but holding off on the access road until we know what's happening for trucks going in for the roundhouse, so as we're not doing damage to new works areas.
Councillor Byrum, given that you're inclined to vote in principle, an option would be to simply vote for the motion without amendment, because then when it's considered with other unfunded items, you could actually bring some division into that funding and make it two sub-stages, if you like. I mean, that would remain to be decided by council. Anything to add from staff?
With the logistics of it too is the question.
Ms. Cuddihan, anything to add?
Through the chair. I'm not entirely sure that would work, given the stormwater infrastructure and car parking needs that we'd need to look at as well. But that can be further looked at through the process of the unfunded initiatives.
Councillor Bilski?
I need to support this.
I'm looking for anyone who's speaking against the motion or wanting to move an amendment.
I just want to speak on another element, but
is there anyone speaking against the motion? We're trying to move the meeting along. If you want to make a really brief point on another topic.
I think the brief point is that we need to make a decision on the roundhouse. To date, I haven't, the evidence I've seen to date hasn't endeared the keeping the roundhouse to me. I know that
Councillor Blesford, just on a point of relevance, I don't think we should be debating the roundhouse right now. We need to hear back from state government and then deal with that issue.
I guess the issue is this is holding it up. I don't know if we were not to keep the roundhouse, is that relevant to state government? Or is that a decision we make on our own?
Well, I think as a number of times over, Ms. Clatterham has explained that the decision we're making tonight is not going to be related to the question of whether or not the roundhouse is kept. So therefore, that particular debate can be dealt with another time. And I'd welcome your remarks when that comes on for debate. All right. If no one is speaking against it, I think we can just put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. So now we go to page 122. And thanks, Ms. Clatterham. Oh, you're still there for the next item as well. Okay. Page 122. Now, there's been discussion about this today, I believe, in terms of the play space strategy and questions asked about the expanded budget involved for the proposed works. I was told that there might be some alternative wording presented, but I haven't seen it. Would any of the councillors like to enlighten me, or there's some... Well, again, it's a pretty big topic, so if there are any key questions, we can start off with that. Otherwise, I'll look for someone to move. Councillor Valesky?
Just in regards to the additional... the removal of the play spaces, I have had a couple in the ward. One comes to mind in particular that is earmarked for removal. The residents are attached to it. They understand that once it's no longer usable or dangerous or the end of its life, it's going to go and not be replaced. But they do not see the sense of removing it for removal's sake. And I want to make sure, I want, I guess, a guarantee that this will not frustrate or circumvent that process.
Well, it may mean that you end up moving an amendment, but in terms of the process that Councillor Valesco is talking about, can you enlighten us on that, Ms. Clatterham?
Yep. The additional removals this evening are in addition to the existing removals. Councillor Valesco, I believe you're referring to an existing a play space that's existing on the existing list, and each play space we will work with the community to understand what the issues are. Should there be any issues raised concerning the removal and that timing, we'll be bringing it back to Council before proceeding.
Right, so in terms of Councillor Valesco's concerns, the play space he's talking about is not on the list that we're voting on tonight. Is that the case?
If Councillor Valesco can confirm the particular site, but I understand it would be Parsons Grove Reserve. That's right, it's not on this list tonight.
Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, just a clarification on that. It was part of Councillor Valesco's question, but is it not correct that the play spaces that are earmarked for removal are only removed when they've reached the end of their normal life?
That's better, huh?
There's no definitive, I guess, perspective on that. We look to only remove play spaces at the end of their useful life, but in areas where there is an over-provision, and should Council wish to remove them beforehand, that could be done as well.
So apologies. So in the current policy, the draft policy, it doesn't say in there that we leave the play space until it's reached the end of its life?
Through the chair, no, it does not.
Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, offline there has been plenty made of the additional budget required to deliver this in the order of around about $2 million. Just a question for administration. Look, my reading of this is that it's not, in fact, although we're using words like you know, required budget, required extra budget and the like. My reading of this is that it's not technically extra money. What it is that we've previously made a resolution to actually compress the time period within which we're going to do these works. Therefore, it's a bringing forward of funds as opposed to new and additional funds. Is that correct?
Over to Mr. Barnwell.
To the Chair, just to confirm, over the 10 years of long-term plan, it will require an additional $2 million in funding. The funding included in the long-term plan currently is $9.2 million, but with the new hierarchies placed over that 10-year period, it will cost $11.2 million.
Sounds like new money. Councillor Pfeiffer, another question?
Yeah, it does indeed. So therefore, it's new money associated with the increase in service standards that we're suggesting to those new levels.
To match the funding with the service standards and the planned works over the 10 years, we would require an increase in $2 million.
And that's what we want to have a bit more of a discussion about by the sounds of it, if this goes through. Councillor Blescu.
Question. So I just want to clarify, on page 135, Appendix 3, the proposed removals, we're not talking about those ones in this debate.
Through the Chair, look, that's correct. The Appendix 3 includes the already existing removals. The body of the report contains the newly proposed removals. So Appendix 3 includes both the existing and the proposed new removals.
Well, Councillor Valeska, I don't think you need to decide it tonight, but can you take up with either Governance Manager or Alicia Cladderham the process if you want to reverse a decision that Council's already made in relation to those works?
I think we've acted quite well with the community on this, Your Worship. We've been fair and open, and they've had some ownership of those areas. But just wanted to clarify that things have been added to the list, but we're not going to turn around all of a sudden because of this and remove the playground. And it doesn't look like we will. And for the new people, it sounds like that they'll get the same understanding here. When theirs is up for removal.
Okay, Councillor Byron.
Thank you, Your Worship. I had a point 4 that I put up today as well to be added in.
Well, I think it probably, because it's of a different nature, I think it's probably better done as an amendment, and I think then, you know, if it'll be your amendment, which you might want to do. Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, just to confirm, mainly for the people who may be listening to this, when we go to remove a play space, which is on the proposed list, that's really the initiation of a public consultation. So it's not a It's a decision to actually look at whether we need a play space in that area. It's not a decision right now tonight to say those play spaces are going to be removed. But can you just confirm that for me, please?
Yes, certainly. Through the Chair. That's correct. Council would be giving in principle support to the removals subject to community consultation. And should there be any issues raised through consultation of the removals, they'll be brought back to Council for further consideration if we were not wanting to proceed with that removal.
Very good.
All right, so it's more like a place space optimisation.
Yes, I'll take that as a rhetorical comment. Someone to move a motion? Councillor Telfer?
I'll move the motions on the screen and would like to speak to that.
That's seconded, Councillor Crossland. So, Councillor Telfer, please go ahead.
We've had the opportunity in ward briefings to put up what we would like locally for our areas. I don't believe that we've had the comprehensive discussion for the whole of the city, and there are some just twigging at the edges that we need to do. We need to struggle to get the $2 million lower. That $2 million pays 1.8 million of it now for the next 3 years for staff to do planning, and it's no good them doing that if we turn around and say, no, we don't have the capital to go ahead with it. So I'm really keen that we affirm the place space areas. They are magic. The Jervois Street playground is well received, well liked, and very popular. I know how popular some of the neighbourhood and local playgrounds are as well. So I'm committed to the play spaces, but we need to go back to a forum and deal with some issues to get the cost down. For example, a discussion of uniqueness. Can we redo our Jervois Street further south where it doesn't need a total revamp of all services? Are there costing ways that we can save, particularly on the regional playgrounds, because the infrastructure around them, like the pathways and all the other infrastructure, has a big ticket. So there's some few things we need to sort out in my mind. And I'm hoping that we have a cohesive framework at the end of the whole city. And I do understand the concern from Councillor Vetlescu about place spaces that need to come out but don't have a replacement yet, and so therefore need to go on for some time. So I'm keen that we go back and just tidy up some of these issues.
Councillor Crossland, seconding.
Just briefly, I also believe that the costs need to come down. I don't think we need regional style play spaces in every street. Unfortunately, the draft policy allows that at the moment, which would increase dramatically our current costs. So I think we need a re-evaluation of how many regional spaces we need, how many neighbourhood, and geographically they probably need to be a little more dispersed.
Is there someone to speak against or amend? Councillor Byram.
Thank you, Your Worship. I support what Councillor Telfer has said, and I want to add in a fourth point. My reason for adding this point in, and I know it is specific, and a few people have asked me questions about that, but I believe we need to have this fourth point in so that we can come to the discussions at the EM Forum about play spaces.
Councillor Byram, it is up on the board now, up on the screen, I should say. Before you continue, I'll just ask if the amendment is seconded. Councillor Westwood, thank you. Councillor Byram, please continue.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, so we just need to have this one in with the discussion for that particular EM Forum. And at the moment, it's not in the strategy at all, so I highlight it there so that it is included in that consideration. It needs to be investigated beforehand.
Thank you. I've got another one, but I've already mentioned at the start as well that I think should be investigated, where we could perhaps get some co-funding. Anyway, Councillor Westwood, you're seconding the motion. No need to elucidate further. Is there any other...
Just to get a word in.
Sure. Go ahead.
I actually do endorse the concept of trying to develop a play space in the southern part of Shadow Park, there, isn't it? Anyway, it's that area that in point four certainly does deserve some kind of play space and has been left out. So this will be a good remedy. Thank you.
Terrific. Anyone speaking for or against the motion? Councillor Holt.
Mr. Mayor, I'm probably speaking for and against the motion at the same time.
I beg your pardon. Sorry, it's remiss of me, but I'm surprised Councillor Appleby didn't have a point of order. What we should be doing is voting immediately upon the amendment. So, forgive me, Councillor Hull, I'll come back to you. All those in favour of the amendment, please raise your hand. All those against the amendment, please raise your hand. That the amendment is carried and incorporated into the motion. Councillor Hull, please go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, it'd be remiss of me not to speak up at this point. Where we're talking about play spaces, because as you know on the agenda there is a motion that I'm putting forward about a destination play space. The issue of small play spaces of questionable worth is very timely. Even today in the Advertiser of Adelaide Now, Adelaide City Council's been singled out, probably for good reason, about a play space that's half the size of a basketball court. And the curious thing is, Mr. Mayor, that we in our own discussions have actually identified in many ways that people are willing to travel to go to a destination play space, a destination sporting field, a destination club room, whatever, where they feel that there's some amenity and service that they would appreciate. And we're continuing to discuss relatively small reserves, small play spaces. So I just wanted to flag that, because we're being inconsistent with our own discussions and our own understanding. So I just wanted to flag it that at this point in time. I don't think that this particular motion is actually going to cause any real problem with that. The removal of play spaces is probably consistent with that, okay? If I can try and bring some parallels together. So as I alluded, Mr. Mayor, I was probably neither speaking for or against the motion, but it's a point of awareness, I think, about what we're doing and what we're facing up to tonight with play spaces, which is a topical issue. The media have covered this on a regular basis, particularly them representing the community, which they often do, to actually get amenities that we don't currently have.
Thank you for the consciousness raising. I'm just going to raise a question with the mover and possibly with staff. The motion before us affirms in principle support for the place-based framework, but in the report and the appendix, there's not a framework. There's a policy, there's not a framework. So what is really the intention? Councillor Telfer? Ms Dixon will help us with that.
Through the chair, so on the second page of the report, it lists part of the framework as being the policy, the service levels, the prioritised work list, and the project methodology.
Okay, so the place-based framework in the motion refers to those four points on page 123. All right. Can we incorporate... In fact, why don't we just replicate the whole thing in the minutes? 1, 2, 3, and 4. And Councillor Pfeiffer wished to speak, so please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Your Worship. Look, I don't disagree with the intent of this, but I don't really see what was wrong with the initial motion. And my reason for saying that is that the initial motion was endorsing the draft for public consultation. There's nothing stopping us having a forum in the meantime while it's out of consultation, and then coming back, bringing it all back to the table, and then doing it. It feels like at the moment this new motion is effectively putting the brakes on the process so that we can then put in a forum, which our forum schedule's chock-a-block, so I don't know when we're going to do it, and then go back and take another document back to council to then put out to public consultation to then approve. Like, it feels like we're adding extra steps in needlessly at this point. And That was my comment. I also have a question that how much time will this add to the process, and will this therefore affect anything to do with the setting of the 17-18 budget, capital budget?
I'll ask staff to answer the question in a moment, but of course, if you want to promote the original recommendations put forward by staff, you can always vote against the motion, and then we might have another look at it. I must say I find something strange in recommendation one endorsing the draft policy and service levels, and then as recommendation two sending them out for consultation. I would have thought that you do one or the other, but it seems odd to me to do both. So anyway, that's if we get to it, we can deal with it. But there was a question there about the capital budget.
Firstly, if we go with this amended motion, noting that we have to now put the whole process on hold, schedule in a forum, have the forum, bring that back to council in a new motion in however many months' time, then put it out to public consultation, then bring it back in and approve it. It just feels like we're adding so much time and needless process to it. Now, I was wondering whether that is then going to eat into the time frames for setting the capital budget associated with place spaces for 17-18.
So, Ms. Clutter.
Yeah, through the chair, Councillor Quaffey, you're quite correct. There will be some months added to the process. I don't see there being a delay in terms of the capital budget. In saying that, the design process for the current play spaces, we're doing design 1 year and implement the next. If we keep with the design of and the capital budget for this next year, that will be limited. But we do need to tie up the service levels quite soon. I think that there would be 3 to 4 months added to the process.
Councillor Crossland, you've already spoken. Look, I think there's been enough debate about it. We've referred to the $2 million variation in the budget, and it's, from what I gather, that's the driver behind the new wording. Any other speakers? Then I'll give the mover the closing of the debate.
I'm proud of the play spaces. And we can all be proud of what's been done, and staff also can be very proud of what they've achieved. But we need to take pride in all our infrastructure, not only our play spaces. So that is why I've that concern about the $2 million. We don't have the same service standard to do with our sports fields and other sports facilities and community halls yet. So we need to go and sort this, discuss it. It's unfortunate to me that it's going to slow it down, but so would finding the extra $1.8 million slow down the budget process in my mind, because it's other infrastructure that would lose its value. I look forward to us having a great plan that we all are comfortable and all agree on. And I don't want the designing for play spaces to get ahead of the implementation of play spaces. So I'm optimistic that with this motion we can move forward.
All those in favour, please raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. The motion is carried by majority. Thank you. So page 138 we move to now, the streetscape project, and might have a change of the guard at the front desk here as Mr. Allen comes up to ask questions. I know I've got a a ripper of a question to start with. What we did in General Council last time the matter was before us was we set out quite specific criteria with a possible maximum score of 25. Prior to that, staff in conjunction with elected members had picked out about 80 potential sites for streetscaping. So they were all put into a league table. There were, for example, there were four spaces which scored the highest ranking of 21. So the recommendation that comes to us from staff after that is that we pick out numbers 5 and 51 of the list. Now, how can that be, Mr. Allen, that we come up with a set of criteria and then staff say by applying the criteria we'll come up with something that's inconsistent with the sites that get the top score?
Thank you, through the chair. Charles Street is very typical of a residential street in the city of Marion. Our intent is to use our existing resources and capital works programs to deliver a streetscape upgrade. Charles Street has been identified in our road reseal program for 17-18. Prior to a road reseal, we undertake curb and water table repairs. This has provided us an opportunity to also look at the street trees and provide water-sensitive urban design where the stormwater can be reused to improve the condition and the health of the street tree.
So is what you're saying that really you're working off a different set of criteria than the ones that council decided on last time?
Through the chair, I suppose it was to provide a demonstration of what can be achieved by coordinating our works to deliver a streetscape upgrade.
Okay. What I would ask you to do, please, Mr. Allen, is go through the four sites that scored 21 and tell us if there's any reason why two of them at least couldn't be included. You know, if let me know if there's any, you know, structural problem or reason for delay. For example, of those top four, we've got Alawuna Avenue, Finnis Street, Marion, Tomsley Greenway, Warrakowie Way. Now, with Tomsley Greenway, I understand that $350,000 was received by way of a grant to promote improvement or creation of that greenway. So wouldn't that be a reason for putting it number one if we've got partnership money to do it? But could you please go through each of those top four and let us know if there's any reason not to prioritise them, even though they do have the priority score?
Thank you, through the chair. Alawuna Avenue should be integrated in the design with Tonsley, so to provide a seamless transition between streetscapes of Alawuna and the Tonsley site. So that's subject to the development of Tonsley, which I would anticipate would be in 2 to 3 years' time. In terms of Finnis Street, yes, that could be considered. I suppose Finnis Street is a long length of road and would require significant investment. The Tonsley Greenway integrates with both the Tonsley site and the Darlington upgrade. So the timings of works would be critical. If council would like to delay the demonstration site for a year or two to coincide with the other works associated with Tonsley and Darlington, that can be done. However, I think the council's intent is to have a demonstration site that can be delivered this financial year. In terms of Warrakowie Way, that could be considered as well. I suppose the scope and extent of works needs to be determined. And it's also trying to integrate any plaza consideration with the Marion Cultural Centre.
all right. The only point where I need to comment there is that the assumed intention that there was to be a demonstration site which had nothing to do with the ranking on the table, I didn't understand that as coming out of the last debate. I thought we were setting criteria, staff were then applying the criteria, and we'd be looking at the sites that scored the highest. But having said that, it's now in the hands of council and they can pick out any sites they like. Councillor Byron?
So just to clarify what Mr. Allen's saying, so those top four priorities are all subject to other grants and other works happening before they can actually have their streetscaping done. That's what you're saying?
Through the chair, that is correct. We do need to be considerate of integrating our works with other activities that are happening in the council area.
Had a question then, Councillor Telford? Councillor Telford, then I'll come back to you.
So, my question was about the length that was mentioned, like in Finnis Street, there's been a street master plan, Finnis Marion to Township Road. And also I'm very aware that we have a wasteland, as I see it, on the corner of Diagonal Road and Miller Street, terrible wasteland there. There is a problem, isn't there, in the way these are listed for the whole of the street, like for that one, the corner of Miller and Diagonal Way is lost in the whole of Diagonal Road, Sturt to Seacombe. So how do we unpack that so that we focus on where the work needs to be done?
Mr. Allen?
Through the chair, the intersection of Miller and Diagonal Road is very site specific. I suppose the intent of the streetscape upgrade is to provide an overall effect as you either walk, cycle or travel through the street.
Councillor Blisker.
Can you move it as is, Your Worship? I can understand, I guess, the concern about why through the process other sites have been decided. It does seem that they are contingent on other matters. One thing though that I, when I brought this first up in my first term of council in 2009 about having an overarching streetscaping policy, is that we do need to look at everything, and the fact that we can actually see how things work with some of the drainage works as is happening in Charles Street I think will be a positive. One thing residents complain about is that, you know, we do something and then we do something later on. So I can understand the disappointment and a bit of a surprise for that one to come in. And probably, you know, bit of a heads up on that would have been good, but we've got it now and I'm happy to proceed. I can understand Ranrod Avenue as well. Although I believe we did do some drainage works there before, so we don't need to do any more. Or that was just around the corner. That bit's a question, yeah.
Through the chair, yes, the drainage works were upgraded approximately 18 months ago. The streetscape treatment that we're looking at also includes some water sensitive urban design as part of the treatment option.
Yep. And just on that, maybe looking at some of the issues with traffic onto the traffic accessing the shopping centre through there, so maybe some discussion with the owners just to, because it can get a little bit hairy around there. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yeah, look, I do second this one. I had issues with the fact that Charles Street, despite being in my ward, was so far down the list as well. However, I'm satisfied now that it is using, if it's something that's on the list to be done from a capital works perspective, it's adding additional funds to the capital works budget to get the best outcome. And we've done that elsewhere in the city and other times. The one thing that I will ask in regard to both of these sites, both Ramrod and Charles, is that from a capital works perspective, we're having a good sit down and a good chat with all the various utilities, because the absolute last thing we want is for 2 years' time for SA Water to come in and put in a new sewer main, or for the gas people to come in and rip up the middle of the road as they tend to do. We want to make sure that we're getting as many ducks lined up prior to actually breaking ground. And if we do have to put off either of these projects because another utility is doing some work in there in 12 months' time, then so be it. We come back to the table and we prioritise two others.
Page 145 of the agenda, the Neighbourhood Centres Marketing Plan. Councillor Telfer.
I also move. The work's been done. I think this is very satisfactory.
Seconded. Councillor Blescu. Anyone opposing a question? Councillor Byron.
Very good work on this, and it's good to be getting a marketing plan. My question just relates to the fact that we've got four neighbourhood centres on there. There's a couple of references to linking with the Cove Civic Centre, and because of some of the activities that are happening at the Cove Civic Centre, I wonder whether that shouldn't be included in with this marketing plan as well. So that's just a question that I would like to see that perhaps included there.
Is that something that can be taken on board in the sort of detailed work that's done? Do we need an amendment of sorts, or is it just something that can be taken on board? Mr. Lawson? So that can be done. That's a starter, taking that on board. Councillor Hull.
Question. In terms of the marketing, it's a shame Councillor Gard's not here tonight to give us some guidance, but will the continuation of the electronic revolution that's happening within the council continue as part of this? Like, will we see a vast variety of challenging and enticing electronic advertising for these premises? And I say that a bit tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, I've been saying that for a while about our library and cultural centre, but why not these places? So will that be taken
Mr. Lawson, are they included? Are we going to be LED-led?
Through the chair, the centres do have screens already, and the plan does propose making use of those screens. The centres have also recently produced some video, which will be obviously lots of, there will be plenty of opportunities to display that. And additionally, the plan has some sort of technical, electronic communication tools in there, electronic newsletters, and so on. So, yeah, that's very much is part of the thinking.
So electronic signs could be part of the...
The plan proposes an audit of signage and a fully costed plan to be developed, so that can be investigated as part of that.
Mr. Scott has something to add?
We don't have plans for electronic signage for all of the neighbourhood centres. The only electronic signage outside buildings is for the administration building and the pool at the Marion Pool, outdoor pool.
Well, at the current pace exhibited by the CEO, we should be able to have four more signs by the end of the council term at least.
Well, draw up a matrix, Councillor Hull, and we'll work off that. Anyone opposing the motion? If not, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried unanimously. Yes, unanimously. Now we move on to page. Thank you, Mr. Lawson. Lawson. Watson. Sorry, Watson. Elementary, really, wasn't it?
Page 168, I think, who has priority? That would have to be Councillor Fryer. Are we? 165? No, I'm definitely halfway through the meeting, having a bit of a blank spot. Ah, gap year. It was just a gap in my agenda. Councillor Hutchinson.
Yeah, I'm gladly moved that way.
Is that seconded? Councillor Crossland? Anyone speaking against the motion? Put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Councillor Fry, you've warmed up for this one?
Not yet, but
page 168, innovative solar options for admin building and Cove Civic Centre.
Yeah, I've got a couple of questions to ask first, if that's all right.
Well, that's you can rip right into it. We have with us consultant Mr. Patrick Green to answer all your questions.
Wow.
So far away.
Excellent. The first question, Patrick, has this been referred to the Infrastructure Committee yet?
Sounds like more of a council process question.
That's true.
Answer's no. Keep going. You've got
question,
three wishes.
Should we refer this to the Infrastructure Committee?
Probably, but it's here now, so we can deal with it if you want. Third question?
It's a tough one. My third question is, do we have any outstanding work remaining to come to us about solar initiatives within the council, or do we have all the information we're going to get without another motion?
That would probably be Ms. Gibbons to answer.
To that one, through the chair. If you recall, at the end of November, there was a further report seeking information on energy efficiency and energy saving opportunities, which renewable energy is one of those for all of council's facilities, so we're progressing that at the moment.
So, moved. Councillor Pryor?
Absolutely, unless anyone else has got a question.
No, we'll get to the question.
Okay.
Let's just get it on the table.
Let's go. I'd like to move just option one at the moment, thank you.
Yes, and I'll just ask if that's going to be seconded. Councillor Byram, I'll come back to. Go ahead and speak if you wish, Councillor Pryor.
Look, there's a couple of reasons I want to move option one. The first one is I think that is a no-brainer. The second part of that is that the rest of it has a little bit more discussion, which I think we need to weigh up. I'd like to see options for the rest of council if we're going to be presented with those options. And I don't believe November's that long to wait. So, really simply, that's the way I want to go.
Councillor Byram.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yes, I want to support option one. I think that is the obvious one to move forward with at this stage. I think the other options like car park, solar, we need to bring that through the Infrastructure Committee and look at other areas of council that we may want to consider as well. So that's why I think at this stage we're going to go with option one. Thank you.
But I just have a question. Do we need to assume that options two and three will come back to us as part of the report that comes at the end of November, or do we need to move it in the motion that they are just considered as part of the mix, just added on, so
probably
to speak?
Probably a question from Ms. Gibbons. What's the plan?
Well, my understanding was that they were being considered tonight. The other report that's coming back will be for all of our other facilities, that includes our leased facilities as well. So this report is on the administration and Cove Civic Centre for consideration tonight.
So options, what is set out in options two and three, in other words, additional solar, both roof and carport for the admin building, they would go off the table unless a member wanted to bring it back on the table as a separate motion later.
I guess I would like to move that option, amend, add to, that options 2 and 3 be considered.
I'll come back to you, Councillor Pilescu. I did say we'll just handle a few questions, but I'll come back to you in a sec. Councillor Hull, you've got a question?
A couple. It's and it really impacts on the whole motion, I guess, in terms of whether you go option 1, option 2 or 3. It's been brought to my attention, and it's not an unheard of thing in local government where we're actually given costs that seem quite extraordinarily high. And I just wonder, particularly with the carport solar arrays, whether we've actually obtained quotes, and if so, how many, particularly when Westfield are actually doing this right now. They're not commissioned yet, but they're doing it right now. And they would have got the best quote, and why shouldn't the people of Marion get the best quote as well?
All right,
I'd like to know that answer straight away.
Is that for... Okay, Mr Green's got... Mr Green can assist in calculation of those figures.
So the investigation that we did for the Solar Innovation Report was to provide an indicative price range for the solar car park option, which we provided a range of $2 to $2.30 a watt, which is normally how we talk about solar. Those were verbal quotes that we got from two providers. We didn't go into detail because there was issues around the Hydropave car park that we understood might change the overall cost of doing that solution.
So I'm talking about the CapEx, not the tariff.
That is the CapEx, yeah.
That is the CapEx?
Yeah, so we calculate CapEx of solar. So it's probably an industry terminology, but if you think about 30 kilowatts of solar, that's 30,000 watts, and we talk about the CapEx as being a certain number of dollars per watt. So the cost range that I've given, for example, for the Cove Civic Centre, we're expecting to come in at $1.25 a watt. So $1.25 times 100,000 watts is your capital cost. We've got really good detailed benchmarking data for that, so we've got a high degree of confidence that you will achieve that for that project because it's a known quantity, it's a regular, it's the sort of project that you do over and over and over again. So we've got plenty of good data points to suggest that you will achieve that. The car park was more of an estimate because there are a bunch of unknowns. There's an unknown around the design that you would go for, whether you'd have a cantilevered array or whether you need to do additional works for structural footings and stuff like that.
Now, my one other question is that council spent nearly $4,000 in this council term to send me to Sydney to a conference, and I brought back a lot of information, and I remember quoting council to two significant findings. One was if you've got an outdoor pool that is a major energy user, and we should, as a council, be focusing on that. If you've got a major administration centre, you should be focusing on that. So I just wonder why we're actually putting an 18 kilowatt array on this building when it's been identified that this should be a target venue. And from the administration, I'd like to know whether the proposed sale of this building has got anything to do with a dismal investment in solar energy on this building.
Can I answer part of that? Yeah. So the limitation with this building is not the load, it's the roof space that you've got available to put solar on. And my advice to council was you can certainly, in the innovation report we talked about expanding the initial recommendation, which was 14 kilowatts on the front roof, which is out the front towards Sturt Road, to 32.5 kilowatts, which is what I would consider the maximum that you could do realistically. My view is that you would pick the low-hanging fruit first, and the more solar that you put on this building, the more expensive it gets for each incremental piece, because the roof is really not well suited to supporting solar.
And so I'll ask Mr. Scull to answer the second part.
Thank you, Chair. The decision about the using this building is totally based around the design of the building and the roof structure. There's no plan in place to sell this building.
Okay, so we'll come back to, it's a maximum of three questions according to the rules. So I'll come back. Oh, you have a question, Councillor Crossland? Yep.
Was the report writer given the option of looking for other innovative areas within council and council buildings to look at as an alternative?
Mr. Green?
So the this report came on the heels of a broader report that we'd done, which I think you've already considered, which looked at those solar options more broadly across different buildings. This report was really focused on just drilling in to the Cove Civic Centre and this building in particular, and seeing whether there was opportunity within these campuses to do something more.
The reason I ask is I was looking for innovation maybe at some of our other sites, and as Councillor Hull has just mentioned, the Marion Outdoor Pool, one of the things that they were after was more shade.
Yeah.
Can we build some of the shades? And the other project we've been revisiting a couple of times was the Marion Cultural Centre, and we know that the design of that building is really poor for solar as well, curved roof. It's also quite a poor design for heat inside the cafe area. And the lobby, it gets like a greenhouse and the air condition can't cope.
Yeah.
One of the solutions was a shade design on the outside of that building. If it's that much sun there, surely that would be an ideal of solar and a shade together, so one cost. They'd be the type of things I'd like to see considered.
Do you want to give an off-the-cuff view on that, Mr. Green?
Happy to give an off-the-cuff view. I guess the findings that we put forward for the solar car park array for this building could equally be applied to other buildings. That sort of cantilevered structure where you've got solar panels integrated into the structure that are more or less freestanding off the ground would make sense at a number of locations. The pool could well be one of them, and we didn't specifically consider that as part of this report. Shading in terms of providing awning shading and stuff like that can be done, but at a greater expense than putting solar panels on a roof. And I guess there's a balance to be made when you're just looking at the financials as to whether or not you want a really cost-effective awning or whether you want a awning that is structurally sound enough to carry solar panels, which is a bigger expense typically.
Thank you very much.
And a question, Councillor Telfer?
Yes. I think I've missed it, but I'm hunting in the report for the Cove Civic Centre for its actual usage or estimated usage per annum.
I can provide you with the at a glance the suggested 100 kilowatt array that we're looking at the Cove Civic Centre would reduce consumption of that site by approximately 35%. I don't have the current grid consumption at the moment, but the system would produce 130-odd megawatt hours a year, export 13% of that to the grid, and reduce overall consumption by 35%. So that was the biggest impact that we would get on all of these buildings. It's probably worth noting that for the admin for this building, even if we were to go for the enlarged 32-kilowatt option on the sort of suboptimal roof, you're only reducing grid consumption by about 8%. So it's not as big of an impact as at the Cove Civic Centre.
Councillor Blescu.
Of this building, why wasn't it considered making it 32 in the first place?
What I was looking for in the initial report was what the most cost-effective option was, and we had a range of buildings to consider during that report. So I looked at this roof and said, okay, 14 kilowatts makes a lot of sense on that front roof. The additional cost of installing that second part is higher to start with. The maintenance cost is likely to be higher and more difficult, and the output is suboptimal, really, because what I look for is either flat roofs or north-facing roofs that are unshaded. In order to do the 32-kilowatt option on this building, you're actually utilising south-facing roofs. And there was one, I think, proposal that council had received from a contractor suggesting that they put reverse tilts on the panel to angle them up. And I talked in the report about that really not being a great idea for a whole bunch of structural, operational and safety reasons.
Question. With the changes in solar technology, is there a payback period that you would say would be too long that you recommend? So is there a point where you'd say you're waiting so many years, you're better off waiting for more advanced technology as far as making a spend?
Sure. So it's probably worth knowing that the solar panel systems that we're talking about in this report all carry a 25-year warranty, so their expected lifetime is 25 years plus, and have a warranty to that extent. I mean, it's entirely up to you what financial decision you want to make. I've sold systems where the payback's 50 years versus a 25-year warranty because that's what people want to do. But you've got 25 years of economic lifetime to pay the system back. So I would say as long as it comes in under that, you're ahead, depending on what sort of discount rate you want to use.
Industry sort of standard that you're sort of...
Not really. You know. It's different drivers for different people. Some businesses that I work with won't consider a payback greater than 4 years. Others are quite happy with the payback of 10 or 11 years.
All right, all good questions. So, Councillor Vlescu, did you want to move an amendment?
Yeah, look, I do. I just want to, and if it's amenable to the movers, options 2 and 3 to be considered as part of the report on the solar/energy efficiency on council old buildings report coming back to council later in 2016. So basically it's all included as part of it, so we can actually compare that if we spend $32,000 in one area, we may not get the same return that we would get here or vice versa. Also, if we are going to spend $100,000 on a car park shade, is that $100,000 better spent on something like cogen for the Marion Outdoor Pool, or are there other areas where we split up solar panels worth $100,000 and the payback period is a lot quicker than the 10 years?
Can I just clarify, your intention is to have options 2 and 3 come back, but in comparison with other potential energy efficiency options, and you want that later this year, so I don't know.
When the other report comes out? Yeah.
Okay, for Councillor Vlescu's information and others, it was the intention of staff in any event to bring back a report with similar sort of options for a greater range of council facilities such as neighbourhood centres and so on, libraries, I guess they've been covered, yeah, leased facilities including our sports facilities, right. So when that report comes back, which was due later this year, these options can be included for comparison. So that actually works out quite well. Won't require a huge amount of additional work to do that. I think that pretty well sums it up, that paragraph 3. Ms. Gibbons is happy with that?
Expecting that, I'm happy to put that date in there?
It'll be November, December, so probably later this year in 2016 is fine. Well, that's fine. Yeah. Okay, first I'll test, is that amendment seconded, Councillor Crossland? Did you wish to speak further to it, Councillor Vlescu? Pretty straightforward. Councillor Crossland, you're okay.
anyone speaking either for or against the motion? Councillor Hull.
Mr. Mayor, I have to speak against it because it's falling short.
Sorry, I've done it again, haven't I? Councillor Appleby, where were you? I have to take full responsibility.
Usually you ring the bell or something.
I shouldn't be outsourcing responsibility for the standing orders.
Point of order, Your Worship.
You're out of order. The mayor was speaking.
Councillor Velasquez asked if the mover and seconder were happy to accept those, so it wasn't technically an amendment.
No, well, I took it as an amendment. So, point of order. Overruled. Councillor Crossman. So we'll be voting on the amendment, which you can see there in your point three. So all those in favour of the amendment, raise your hand. All those against the amendment, that's carried by majority. That becomes part of the motion. Councillor Hull, your turn to speak.
Mr. Mayor, I'm a great believer in energy efficiency and using renewable energy. But this is falling short of community expectation. This council started out with great fanfare where the Messenger Press covered this. Council spending $600,000 on, you know, being, you know, high tech and community aware and environmentally aware and smart city and whatever you want to call it. And now we're spending two-thirds of that. We've duped the community into thinking that we're doing something significant. And the other part of it is that The very issue I brought back after the burghers of Marion spending $4,000 to send me to Sydney and back, the outdoor pool is just overlooked completely. We only just talk about it. It's not in the report. So to me, it's personally disappointing. This building here, package it up as you wish. Package it up as you wish. You know, but 18 kilowatt system, most businesses and houses have got more than that in our city. It's piddly. The red house over there's got nothing on it. The whole issue of the carport solar arrays, in the car park out here, not even going to be considered. We keep going back to, oh, the building's not the right shape. But there's other things we can do, and we're not doing it. And it's all because the council is considering selling this building.
It's blatantly misrepresenting the situation.
I uphold the point of order because that's just not true. That's false. And it's part of a scare campaign that you're running in Council Hull. It's irresponsible.
Release the report.
I caution you.
Release the report, Mr. Mayor.
Because Council is not considering that.
Release the report.
We're going to deal with it later this evening as an item, but there is no Council plan to do whatever you're saying. So I caution you. Any other speakers for the motion?
By the spending that we are doing on solar, are we able to get a bit of an update on that? Because I believe that it's not just this, there's a few other things that we're looking to do.
That's your last question, Councillor Velescu.
So you'll recall, I think it was at June meeting, we endorsed the $400,000 for the solar on the 8 sites. With the addition of this project, that'll be increasing the cost by a further 62, so we're nearly up to $500,000, if my maths is correct. So that's in terms of implementation. So the procurement process is about to start, and those projects will be delivered in this current financial year. The further report that will be coming back later this year is about solar for a range of other sites, as was mentioned previously.
$500,000 with more to come. All right. Any other speakers for the motion? Then I call on Councillor Pryor to close the debate.
Yeah, very quickly. Firstly, I'm really happy that we're talking about this. There's a lot of feeling around the table. I like it. It's good. It shows we're heading in the right direction. With regard to Councillor Hull, I don't think he needs to worry. We'll spend the money. It will go on solar. I have almost no doubt about that at all. Almost. Whether it goes this financial year or next is probably a question for the administration, to be honest, but we'll get there eventually. I really want to see a few other options. I mean, there's a dozen ways to do this job. There's more than we're even going to look at this time. And I think that there's certainly other low-hanging fruit, as Mr. Green mentioned. There's certainly stuff we can do which has about the same payback. Look, I mean, I have every intention next year of moving a similar motion where we put some more money towards solar and maybe look at the slightly longer payback items. So until we cap it all off, I think we'll keep doing this. The last thing, the pool, I think a lot of things make sense for the pool. They don't make sense at all individually. We need to consider the whole thing. So if we end up going cogen, solar maybe doesn't make as much sense. But if we don't do cogen, then solar makes a lot of sense. So it's definitely an overview with regard to the pool there. So thank you.
Yes, staff will bring back a report that includes a cogeneration option for the pool. I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, that's carried by majority. So, and thank you, Mr. Green. Got through that amazingly well. We turn to page 189, our public health planning. Someone wish to move? Councillor Byram moving as printed. Is that seconded? Councillor Telfer, anyone speaking against or question? Councillor Hull?
This responsibility for councils is a relatively new thing, changes in legislation. And I only recall this maybe the second time it's come to us. Would that be correct? Yeah.
Dixon. I note that elected members are being updated from time to time as news comes to hand in relation to contamination issues, but I'd invite Ms. Dixon to respond.
Through the Chair, yes, that is correct. When we get advice from the EPA, we send that through to Council. But to my knowledge, that's the extent of the investigations. We leave that to the EPA.
Mr. Mayor, that's not the intent of the legislation.
Is that a question you have, Councillor Hull?
Well, I find that as a bit dismissive, that basically it's the EPA's issue. Well, my argument is, and I believe the legislation's argument is, that councils now have a greater role and greater community expectation in terms of monitoring matters that may impact on their health.
Ms. Dixon, wish to comment?
Through the Chair, that's not our understanding, that these changes have increased our responsibility in that area.
It wasn't what I was told last time, that the Council would look at the issue of groundwater contamination.
As I say, Councillor Hull, it is the subject of regular reporting. So we're looking at it, but it's generally information that's passed on to us from the EPA or some other agency.
Can I just ask this question? In terms of the legislation relating to why we're having these reports tonight, the item right now is the legislative requirements of councils and expectations of councils behind that. Can that come back to us in the short term, so we've got a better understanding why we're going through this process right at this very minute?
Ms. Dixon.
Through the Chair, we can circulate information outside of this meeting that summarises the intent of these changes and Council's role in reporting.
Sure. I mean, you've got a summary on pages 189, 190. It's a summary.
But I'd also invite you to take it up with Ms. Dixon after the meeting to get some more detail. But staff will send around a little bit more explanation of why we have to do this and what it means for council to do it. Is that fair enough, Ms. Dixon? Thank you.
Yes, we'll do that.
So, questions we have? Councillor Westwood?
Yes, the question is actually on behalf of Councillor Gard, who's not here this evening. Generally, it's on the mental health issues that's amongst the emerging public health issues listed in the report. Has that progressed much past just an emerging topic? Anything else developed from that? Thanks.
Ms. Dixon?
We'll just get Ms. Delgado to come up, who's got more detailed knowledge.
Could I just ask for your indulgence and make sure everyone speaks into the microphone, please? Thank you.
Yeah, through the chair, with the data we have about mental health, it's from sources that it's really just the baseline data that we have at the moment. So, and it only gets updated every few years, I think. So it's not something that we're looking at seeing an evidence of that data improving rapidly. It's really council being aware of that data and looking at what potential role it might have in trying to address that as one health issue out of many.
So there's no action by council on this issue, or support for maybe some action by state government?
It's an interesting issue because really the work of council, almost all the work of council impacts on people's health, their physical and mental health. So you can look at all the work that we do through our community centres and neighbourhood centres and libraries. It's looking at what's the causal factor for mental health, of which there are many, but one could be social isolation. So council has a role in addressing that, and we do already do that through our services that we provide, in supporting aged people to live in their own homes, through services that we provide through our community centres, libraries, events and other open space. All those things we do can have a positive impact on that.
Thank you.
That figure.
Yes, I know that mental health is referred to on page 199 as an emerging issue. So my paraphrase of the purpose of this is that it's for council to be aware of these issues and to incorporate alleviating or helpful actions in our plans to the extent that they are council responsibilities. So it doesn't add to the responsibilities, but it insists that we be conscious of the state government's responsibilities or federal government's responsibilities in relation to health, and we help where we can within our field of operations. So that's what this is about. Councillor Westwood?
Yes, it's just that I see emerging from all this is that, and I quite agree with the advice we've had so far from staff, that really it's the various actions that we can take through neighbourhood centres and other social development activity that we can in some way influence and help in this area. So I'm satisfied with the answer. Thanks very much.
Councillor Crossman.
Yeah, just a couple of questions. So just to confirm, this particular legislation, when it was brought in, was more really to endorse councils looking at these types of issues strategically in their business plans and strategic documents, not a cost-shifting exercise.
Yeah, through the chair, yes, that is correct. It is not a cost-shifting exercise. Most councils have public health plans or regional public health plans. I think it's Marion and Tea Tree Gully that we were in a position at the time to actually choose to address public health issues via our strategic planning, and that is the position that the state government are hoping all councils shift to, and so they're actually looking at us as a bit of a leader in that area.
Thank you. And just to pick up on Councillor Hall's point,
I think where he was looking at councils taking on responsibility for pollution, that's something that's being considered at the moment by the government to shift all that responsibility onto council. But my understanding is that's not legislatively passed through yet. That's just something that the government would like to do with the changes to the EPA.
Well, it may not be all pollution, but environmental nuisance policing. Ms. Dixon, anything to add? Councillor Bilisco. Yes, why not?
Look, I think this is really good that we're aware of this, and I guess I'll note that you know, we've got a councillor here in this room that I'm aware of was quite involved in the health system and still helps support the health system, and a lot of the stuff that we deal with in our health system is preventable. So whatever role we can play to look at alleviating or preventing some of those problems, we're all better off, because as we get sick, there's one less person in the bed that we have to wait for. That's a preventable illness. Also, we're having challenges, I guess, on the bigger picture financially about funding our health system. So the way to do it is a bit like reducing your costs, and that's what we're trying to do. So it's part of the big picture. I'm glad that this isn't about cost shifting. I know that there have been things in the past where we have had cost shifting for providing important services where other levels are doing it. So I just think that this is highly important, and whatever role we can play within our everyday business is a very important one.
Thank you. And just before we put it to a vote, I don't see reference to domestic violence in there, and I wonder whether that should be one of the issues that's addressed. Ms. Delgado?
Yes, through the chair. It could be picked up in the data that we have, but the data, a lot of it is what we consider a low risk, and I think that one is in that category. It's not a high risk for the Marion area, but I can check that and amend this report to include that, if you wish.
Oh, if staff could just be conscious of it, we should put this to a vote. Councillor Warren, got a quick one?
Well, I was going to close the debate.
Need much debate, but yeah, if you could do that briefly.
But I didn't get to talk at the beginning.
Yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah. So, thank you to everyone else who's made most of the points for me. I want to say to the staff, thank you for all the work that's been put into this, because it is a very important area for us to be involved in. It's not something that we should be putting off. We need to really be doing what we can with preventable stuff. And I wanted to just make a note about how there's been the increase of people running home businesses and the food premises, the temporary ones. And it is, these sort of things do create a burden on our staff and inspections and things of that nature. So we really need to be aware of these and on the front foot moving forward with all these health issues. And also with the fact that we've got an ageing population, we need to be aware of this. So a thank you to the staff for the work that's been done.
Thank you, staff. Thank you, councillors. All those in favour, raise your hand, please. That's carried unanimously, thank you. And now we jump to page 200, and we're dealing with a limited club licence application from the Vietnam Vets Federation. Councillor Hull, to move.
Mr Mayor, I move the recommendation as printed. As members would know that over a long period of time I take a look at licensing issues quite seriously. I have on a number of occasions represented residents in the Liquor Licensing Commission with different sporting clubs and hotels. In fact, a hotel within 150 metres of these premises have caught my attention before, and I've been to court over that. I've had a good look at the report. It does make one considerable reference to SAPOL's opinion. And I might say that it is disappointing that staff tells me that they couldn't get that in writing. I think that is a service failure by SAPOL, the local service area, to this council. We have very few liquor licensing matters that we seek their advice on, and I believe that they've failed the citizens of Marion by not putting that in writing. But they actually said verbally that they don't have any issue with this particular application. So it's better than having no advice at all. Members, I run the local neighbourhood watch group in that area, have done for years, 20 years, I've never heard anything back through those sources. In fact, I've only heard positive things. In fact, at the last neighbourhood watch meeting, the subject that came up, and I was told by a resident who lives in that very street that I'm not sure what the problem is. Why would you object? In the report, it talks about being concerned about barbecue smells. Mr. Mayor, that's not a liquor licensing issue. I don't know whether there's a barbecue ban in the local area, but there shouldn't be. And I just do wonder. Now, the only thing that I'd like to suggest to our staff, and it is in the report, that the residents would like to urge the club to use the car park adjacent to them at their disposal to the best of their ability. In other words, to keep cars off the streets. And I would think that would make sense to me. And if staff could actually take that on board and convey that back to the club, that is a concern of the council and a strong suggestion, that would be a good thing. Mr. Mayor, to get to the social side of this, I've got to say, Vietnam vets have a enduring legacy of coming back from fighting overseas and not coming back to a welcoming or friendly community. I don't see why this should be dragged on by objecting to them having the amenity that is proposed here, which really shouldn't cause much concern to anybody.
Yeah, Councillor Hull summed it up really well. I'd just like to reiterate that the SA Police have no issue with this. There's always options in the future if issues do arise, so I support this as well.
Anyone speaking against the motion? If not, I'll put the motion. Those in favour, raise your hands. That is carried unanimously. Thank you. And now we come to three different policies. Procurement, community engagement and climate change. I note that procurement, in fact all three have been the subject of some modification as they've been presented to us and the community for comment. So procurement has been through finance and audit, and I'm pleased to see some of the changes that have been incorporated. Community engagement, climate change have been out to the community, come back pretty well unscathed. So if anyone is minded to, you could actually move these three on block and of course, speak to any of them. Councillor Telfer. Councillor Pryor, seconded.
Absolutely.
Anyone speaking against? There's actually a lot of good collaboration that's gone into those, so again, thanks staff, thanks councillors. I'll put it to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hands. All against, that's carried by majority. Thank you. Cove Tigers Netball Club and Hallett Cove Netball Club on page 245. I just want to clarify one thing, that normally if we were putting out new funding, we would take it to the unfunded projects list, but this is one where by council resolution we've already approved payment of the funds. It's just that we made a proviso of them getting funds from a particular source, and they've got it from another source. So we're not shelling out any more, and this is an opportunity to achieve the objective that we, in fact, resolved upon last time. Councillor Byram? And Councillor Crossland is seconding the motion. Anyone speaking? Did you want to speak to it, Councillor Byram? We'll just clarify the motion that you're actually moving. Do we have the...
Could I just have staff clarify on the record what the staff recommendation is?
Essentially, we have just amended the recommendation to be what is already worded on page 246, which actually then would show in the resolution the exact changes to the original motion as opposed to just the change. So it is what is printed on page 246 of your report.
I'm actually now a bit more confused than I was before. I mean, what do you mean it's showing the changes instead of the changes?
It is actually showing the original motion and then what's changed, as opposed to just what has changed. So we're actually showing the original motion and then how it's amended, because it is actually an amended motion. It's not a new motion.
Right. The motion is to amend the 14th of June resolution.
The 24th of May resolution, yes.
Thank you, pardon.
In the report, the original recommendation purely had the amendment.
Sorry, I was reading from the wrong page, I suppose. So we are resolving, this is what Councillor Byram was moving, that we are amending the resolution of 24th of May, because, and it's really just stating that the club has sourced its matching funding from a different source. We're identifying that source, just to be really clear about it. Okay. Is there anyone speaking against? Then all those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. The following item concerning Clovelly Park netball is withdrawn. Councillor staff want to do some more work on it, so it'll probably come back next time. We jump over to page 205. Question from Councillor Bolescu. I advise you to take it up with staff if you've got questions about that particular one. The next one, page 250, review of the Signatures Cafe confidential order. I must admit, to the best of my ability, I cannot recollect why we asked for this one to come back in September. It was probably the mayor being pernickety, but I can't really remember why. You'll have to read the audio if you want to catch up on that. And it comes back in December anyway, to be considered. But original motion was circulated to members on a confidential basis. It's not all here in front of us, but it has been emailed to us this week, and the same reasons of commercial in confidence information or information concerning the commercial affairs of a person still apply. So section 90 applies, so you shouldn't have too much trouble with it. So looking for someone to so move. Councillor Westwood. Seconded, Councillor Fiker. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Members, page 252, following the Chair's coming to the end of his term on the Finance and Audit Committee, there's a recommendation there for you. Moved, Councillor Telfer. Would you like to? And seconded, Councillor Hull. Would you like to speak to that, Councillor Telfer?
We look forward to the continuation of Mr Greg Connor, if you so approve, so that he builds on what he knows of this council, but also interrogates what is known, and that we go ahead and really use his constructive interrogation of our strategies and processes.
Councillor Hull?
I concur, and if I find Mr Connor a straight shooter, and he's got a forensic mind, which I think we need. And I'd like, if he's listening tonight, I'm sure he is, just to encourage him to keep up his good work and do actually maybe even do it better if he finds the time to do so.
Sure, he'll be able to attach the transcript to his resume, I reckon. I'll certainly put that to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you, and thank you to Mr. Connor for the work that he's done so far. On page 255, nominations for the LGA board. No, really, I can't accept. Sorry, Councillor Hutchinson. No, sorry, go ahead. No, what were you going to say, Councillor Hutchinson?
I was going to give you at least the opportunity. Your Worship, I'd like to ask a question, and that is, would you be happy to be nominated for either a position, even as a deputy?
Councillor Hutchinson, I am so dedicated to the City of Marion, I don't think they could spare me. I'm not going to ask the staff if I could be spared, but it's my opinion that I probably need to devote even more time to the City of Marion. So the timing isn't good, but thank you for the question, Councillor Hutchinson. Councillor Hull?
Look, I want to make sure that Miles Kemp realises that I haven't nominated Mr. Mayor. Just for the record, that can be recorded in the minutes, that I haven't nominated.
Is that a serious request for it to be recorded in the minutes? Oh, thank goodness. Well then, what do we do if we don't want to do anything? Note the report number one. Okay, so someone's Councillor Hutchinson's moving recommendation number one as printed. Is that seconded? That's noting the report. Councillor Fife will second it. All those in favour, please raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now we jump over to... Hang on. This is the noting one. Is this the... We're on to page 263. Councillor Hull.
Could somebody confirm that the Local Government Finance Association was part of a report by the Auditor General only last year that found some...
Point of order.
Point of order, Councillor.
We're dealing with the topic of election for representative members, not the quality of the actual LGFA.
No.
Well, I don't uphold the point of order. Since we're dealing with the LGFA, it's probably a fair question. Do you want the answer to it, Councillor?
No, well, the question is, to qualify my question, is that if there are sitting members on that... You know where I'm coming from.
Let me jump in there, Councillor Hull. The Auditor-General reviewed the insurance schemes which are associated with the LGA last year and came out with a scathing report last September. However, that wasn't the LGFA. That wasn't the Local Government Finance Authority. So,
who oversees that?
Well, it's a statutory authority. It publishes an annual report. The Auditor General could, in theory, look at it, but in answer to your question, no, the Auditor General didn't look at it last year.
So in terms of the insurance, who monitors that portfolio?
There are two. I think it's important to understand there are two totally different
The LGA and the
group.
LGA.
Well, even apart from the LGA, the Local Government Finance Authority looks after well, finance the local government sector by statute. The local government, the LGA, appoints a couple of board members to the local government finance authority. I think, I'm not sure how many, but some. I think it's two. There's also the insurance schemes, which are wholly owned subsidiaries of the LGA. So it's in a completely different basket. The LGFA is set up by a statute of the South Australian Parliament. The insurance schemes are wholly owned subsidiaries for the different types of insurance, whether it be asset insurance or workers' comp insurance. And the you will find that the LGA appoints the board members, but that is a totally separate issue from the LGFA.
Okay. Thank you.
No, it's important to get that in mind. Now, in relation to the LGFA, before we get into the debate, there's a really significant fact which I need to bring to your attention, and that is that the local government finance authority annual general meeting takes place on the same morning as the local government association general meeting, and there is a motion on notice to be dealt with at the LGFA general meeting. It's a motion which comes from Mitcham Council, and it's a motion asking the board to investigate ceasing the provision of financial services to non-LGA members. Now, currently, that is simply not possible because the statute sets it up as operational for all local government agencies in South Australia, all councils or shires, whatever they might be. So it's interesting that it comes from Mitcham Council, because the mayor of Mitcham Council is on the board of the LGA, and you might wonder whether the motion by Mitcham Council is a proxy for the direction the LGA board is heading in. In any case, it could be viewed as a motion which is to cause anxiety among any councils or councillors thinking of departing the LGA. Now, I give you that preamble because it may, given that Marion Council is fairly close to evenly balanced. We know that from two votes, fairly close to evenly balanced on whether to be part of the LGA or not. That motion is very much against the interests of Marion Council. So one of the options I was going to put to you, it's not in the recommendation there, but one of the options I was going to put was that you might wish to delegate the authority for voting to the mayor. And if you did that, I would then write to all of the candidates asking them their intention in respect of the motion going to the LGFA, and I would only then vote for those who said they were going to reject that motion from Mitcham Council. Well, we don't actually, and that's why, unfortunately, as I come to you tonight, or as this motion comes to you tonight, we don't know the position of these candidates in respect of the Mitcham motion. But it would be in, well, there is obviously a potential decision that Marion might make in the future, and if that is going to be seriously considered, at a later point, then that motion being put forward by Mitcham could be seen as injurious to our interests. Councillor Blesker?
Happen whether it's better off going through a more neutral party, because obviously you've publicly expressed your view on this, and would it be better getting someone else, the CEO, to do that, just so you're not put in a compromised position?
I'll ask governance, who is eligible to attend the LGFA AGM on behalf of City of Marion?
The delegate is currently the mayor.
No, but if...
But who can it be? Can it be a staff member? Can it be you or whatever?
Generally as an elected member, not a staff member.
My question is just about the asking. Is it better coming from someone who hasn't got a view either way if we're going to ask them their position?
Well, by definition, we pretty well all have a view either way because we've all voted on it and stood up or sat down in a division. So, I mean, I'm trying to be helpful, but I'm not sure who else you'd have in mind. I'm certainly open to suggestion.
Mr. Mayor,
just a sec. Staff are advising that should council wish to take into account this particular factor, that it would be more in order to write to people, get a response, and then make a decision at the next council meeting.
Mr. Mayor, I would support that, and regardless of that outcome, you should be our representative. You're the nominated representative as per our request. And if it means sending the mayor to send the strongest message to stop activities that are normally related to a cartel, then you should be the man going forward. Regardless of what you think of the LGA, this is cartel-type behaviour that's being proposed by the City of Mitcham, and I think it's unsatisfactory and abhorrent.
There are a couple of potential motions here. If Councillor Blescu wants to, it would make more sense to follow a motion on from what you're saying, Councillor Hull, to test that. If it is the will of the Council that a different representative go to the LGFA AGM, then that could be an amendment. No, there's no need to. The options there open for any elected member if they wish to, you know, move an
Not
amendment.
Not that at all.
But I
you
think
wish.
That all order.
With respect.
Order. No, there's, never mind the respect, but I appreciate it. Thank you. But Councillor Hull, if you want to move a motion to resolve the issue, then something...
I raise a point of clarification, Your Worship.
I'll come back to you. Look, the Chair is talking. I'm trying to get a motion going here to at least get the motion debated. So, Councillor Hull, if you wanted... I'm told there is time to resolve the actual voting at the next General Council meeting. So if the motion could be simply that the Mayor writes to candidates to assess their view on the motion put forward by Mitcham Council to the LGFA AGM.
Yeah, I would support that. I ask you a question. Would it be equally valuable for you to write to the candidates for the other LGA position, namely the President, to find out what their views are as well, so we've got informed decision-making?
Would you like to include that?
Yes, please.
Very well. Has staff got that as well? So it's all the candidates for the LGFA board. Sorry, Ms. Thwaites, if you go back to the first slide. All candidates. So it comes after candidates, yeah. To all candidates for the LGFA board
And the LGA executive.
And the LGA executive.
Nominations.
LGA board. Right. So, yeah. Okay. We're on track. Now, I've got now that that's up there, people can think about it. I've got a couple of points here. Before I ask for a seconder, I'll come back to Councillor Blescu way of a personal explanation, I suppose.
I'll speak to the motion, Mr. Mayor, when you're ready.
Yeah, we'll come back to you for that. Yep, definitely. So I'll take it as a personal explanation, Councillor Blescu?
I see the merit in us asking the candidates their position on this. I don't see it as a helpful move by that council. I wanted, if the approach was going to be made asking and then deciding, I just wanted that process to be a little bit clearer, and I just didn't want to have, that's why I thought, well, maybe if it's coming to council, that's fine, and the mayor writes them, that's fine, the mayor's representing us, but that's what I wanted. It's not about the mayor not going to this committee. I welcome that, and I never mentioned that. It was just more about going to them and making the decision, and that's all.
Understood. No offence is taken. There's absolutely no problem with your contribution earlier, really. Just want to check. Councillor Hutchinson, what have you got?
After my hand's been up for 5 minutes, I'll just make a note of that verbally for the recording. I think we're entering the territory now that I feel conflicted, so I'm going to leave the room on the perceived conflict of interest around the LGA membership.
Fair enough. So we have, that's been noted, we have a motion. Do I have a seconder? Let me just test that. Councillor Appleby, so Councillor Hull, you may proceed to speak to the motion.
Well, Mr Mayor, thank you. And look, thank you for bringing this to our attention, because if you hadn't, we wouldn't have known about the behaviour of Mitcham Council with this particular issue. And I just wonder whether, you know, they've got other support as well within the LGA. Mr Mayor, the LGA is going from one public disaster exercise to the next. Only a few days ago, they tried to organise a governance review on the very night that most councils meet, and then sent out the distribution list for every councillor in the metropolitan area at the same time, and then we're slow off the blocks to even correct that. And now we've got this. And thank you for letting us know, because this is probably typical of the LGA that I thought was we were leaving behind. This is very bad behaviour. And it is cartel behaviour. It's a way of locking in business. It's a way of actually stopping people from leaving. And that is not in our best interest. It's not even in the ethic of the fair go in this country, where you're actually forced to be a member, because if you don't, these are the consequences. So what they're doing is shutting the gate for Marion or any other council to even think about leaving, because you wouldn't be able to justify it easily with the community, because the costs involved in the financial provisions that we get through the LGFA. So, you know, this is quite an extraordinary attempt to actually tell us who should be within the LGA and the terms that they actually belong in the LGA. And even those members here that have been supporters of staying in the LGA thus far must think just a little bit even that this is not really comfortable. This is not right. And it's up to councils to decide whether they can leave or not. And given the recent history with Marion and the LGA, is this really consistent with the dawning of a new era for the LGA and for us to feel better about being members? Particularly when it seems to be being led by a board member of the LGA within the Mitcham Council, from what I can tell. But we'll find out, obviously. We'll find out, to be fair to Mayor Spears. We'll find out about his response if this motion is successful. And there's nothing wrong for a council to seek information. And that's all we're doing. And then we can make up our own minds about who's worthy of our vote within the LGA. And I think that's another issue again. It's informed consent when we actually get one of these ballot papers as to who is the appropriate people we should be voting for. Okay? So that's another angle again. And thank you once again, Mr. Mayor.
Seconded by Councillor Appleby.
Thank you, Worship. I fully support the motion. I see this as a petty move. It's not in the interest of the councils that remain members of the LGA even, because obviously the more funds that are in the scheme, the lower the cost of managing those funds. So I see this as getting back potentially the City of Marion, and I think we should find out where the candidates stand.
Anyone speaking against the motion? Councillor Gillescu?
I just have a question. If someone doesn't pay their rates in the City of Marion, what do we do to them?
Oh,
outlook, how is that relevant?
With what they're doing, I think it's counterproductive. But I can understand why they may want to ask a question if it's a service that's been paid for by a group and one person wants to move out, they may be getting pressure on their side to say that. So I think we can't, whilst I disagree with it, I think it's a stupid move. I understand the motivation as to why they may be doing it, apart from a potential mischief element.
Sure. I'll take that as rhetorical, but appreciate your contribution. Thank you. Councillor Westwood?
Sorry, just clarification. Excuse me, I didn't actually hear it properly, but in essence, very briefly, what did the Mayor of Mitcham write about?
No, let's be clear. There's a motion presented to the LGFA board meeting, annual general meeting, asking the LGFA board to investigate the withholding of services from non-LGA members. It was clearly a motion that was passed by Mitcham Council. Beyond that, we can speculate, but we don't know who moved it, why they moved it, etc. We're speculating in that area. Did you need to close the debate or just put the vote?
Yeah, Mr. Mayor, this motion's all about writing to the Mitcham councillors and these people here on this voting slip, and also the nominees for the LGA board. It's only a letter to ask them what their position is. That's what this is all about, okay? And then we can actually form our own views as to what we're really dealing with here and who's behind it. Because, like a council election, you'd like to know what's behind the name and whether they're going to represent you appropriately, whether they're acting in a cartel way, because that would influence my vote, Mr. Mayor, and that's why we need to find out.
All right. Put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against. It's carried by majority. Thank you. So we go to page 276. Now we're talking about the Chief Executive or the approach to assessment of the Chief Executive performance for 2015-16. We're running a November to November assessment period. The motion arises because the People and Culture Committee decided to incorporate a 360-degree survey, which is where a number of people with whom the Chief Executive has regular dealings are asked their opinion on a whole range of, in a structured sort of survey. The question arose, what use should be made of that as opposed to the KPIs we agreed upon last year? And the recommendation of the People and Culture Committee was that it be used for conversational, educational purposes with the Chief Executive, because by its nature it's a subjective sort of appraisal, whereas the KPIs that we agreed to a year ago will in fact be used for the formal assessment. So that's what comes before you like that. Councillor Telfer? Is that seconded? Councillor Hull? Anyone speaking against the motion or any questions? Then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. Now we go to the finance report, and we could also take the monthly workers' comp report with that. Beg your pardon?
There's a mistake on that previous motion.
Oh, I beg your pardon?
Councillor Hull is not here tonight.
It was...
Oh, Hull, sorry.
Seconded.
Sorry.
Yes, if...
It's all right, it's getting late.
Councillor Byram, if you didn't hear Councillor Hull tonight, I think Councillor Westwood's got some earphones that will help you interpret.
Sorry, I was thinking of Jim Gunn. Sorry.
So, onto the finance report. I think
this could be moved en bloc, but once again people can ask questions on either topic. If you'd like to move the finance report on page 282 and the work health and safety report on page 296, they're both well, receiving and noting those reports. Councillor Telfer?
I'm prepared to move both those, but I have one quick question.
Sure.
On page 292, the sports facilities and courts, I note that we have quite a lot of resources of approved budget and that we've done about half of it. Are we hoping to catch up on our slowness?
Who's going to take that? Mr. Scott? No? Mr. Barnwell? The top graph, isn't it, on page 292?
Yeah, through the chair. Yes, obviously, as I said, the program is 25% complete, but that won't necessarily affect the actual funding. They are working through the program, and they are anticipating that they will actually use those funds in full. So, in answer to your question, yes, they are anticipating to catch up with the funding and works.
Councillor Telfer, did you have any more to add? Is that seconded? Those two reports being received and noted. Councillor Kerry, thank you. Anything to... any other questions? Councillor Pfeiffer.
Thank you, Your Worship. Just in regard to the IHS, the WHS one, I'd quite like to have circulated after the fact via email the situation around that one LTI that's occurred, and possibly in future reports, obviously with nothing that identifies a staff member, but to have a paragraph whenever we actually have an LTI, to have a paragraph explaining what the nature of that was, but obviously done in a sensitive way that doesn't identify the individual.
Yes, Mr. Scull's taken note of that and is agreeable, so that'll be done. Yep, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, just a quick one. On page 292 in the budget, the street tree budget, is that linear growth representative of our spending on the street tree budget, or is our street tree budget kind of tail off as it gets hot and then pick up again as we go into planting season?
Mr. Barnwell.
Thank you, through the chair. We do have expenditure throughout the year when we actually order stock of plant for the next planting season.
Okay, if there are no other questions, Councillor Hutchinson is back.
Just on the back of that, why wouldn't we, rather than trying to oversimplify with just a linear progression, why don't we actually show when the actual spending is and when we predict the actual spending?
Mr. Barnwell.
Through the chair, we are trying to, we've encouraged our budget officers to actually realign their budgets to their actual spend as opposed to the linear method that was noted from the last meeting. We have adjusted some of them, but as part of the first budget review, we're anticipating we'd be able to further align that expenditure rate.
But Councillor Hutchinson, did you mean that for the 12-month period you have an intended as well as the actual?
Yes, absolutely. So the intended, for argument's sake, hypothetically, you would expect more to be at a particular time for street trees, and obviously you would have some residual spend over it, but actually show the where the peaks and troughs are.
Mr. Scull?
Thank you, Chair. We're requiring of budget holders to actually time their budgets more appropriate to the actual spend, so this isn't reflective of actually how it is, and we're aware of that, and we're working towards it.
We are just improving all the time. Any other questions? Then I'll put the motion for those two reports. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried unanimously. Thank you. We have the communication reports starting page 299 and on to 301. Move that they be received. Somebody, Councillor Hutchinson, that's seconded. Councillor Crossland, all those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. We note the
question about residential addresses on page 302. We note the Mayor's question on fraud prevention on page 303. We come to Councillor Hull's motion regarding Sturt Police Station.
Your Worship.
Councillor Crossland did indicate...
Just to explain, I have a conflict of interest with this particular item as it refers to my employer, so I will be leaving the meeting.
That's understood, and we'll let you know when the item's resolved. Probably someone will. Councillor Hull, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move the motion as printed, and that is that the City of Marion vigorously objects to the reduction of front counter hours at the Sturt Police Station by writing to the Police Minister and all local MPs indicating that this regional police headquarters should remain open 24 hours daily. Mr. Mayor, my comments there pretty much sum up why I have moved this motion. It is because the thin blue line, as I call it, where do you draw the thin blue line in terms of what appears to be a government trying to save money? And let's face it, we're doing that. We're looking for every opportunity. But we are also very conscious of the fact that there's a thin blue line in this case between being a lean government and being a mean government. And I think that by closing the Sturt Police Station after hours is a mean government, and that's not what the community want. Since this has been brought up, Mr. Mayor, not only by me but by other councils, I have received a lot of support in the community, particularly from my neighbourhood watch group, in terms of us advocating for the community to stop the closure of the Sturt Police Station at night. Mr. Mayor, we've lost the Hallett Cove Police Station completely. Now, I remember being on this council where it was heralded that we're going to get a police station in the south, and it was big news, and there was an opening. And, you know, we've lost that ground. And now I hear that Netley and Glenelg Police Station are actually going to go to 9 to 5. And the news about Sturt, I thought, was a step over the line, and they've gone too far. Mr. Mayor, not only that, the Sturt local service area will get much, much bigger soon because it will absorb the South Coast Police LSO and therefore put even bigger demands on the regional police headquarters. The other thing is too, from the grassroots people perspective, it is my view, Mr. Mayor, and I'm sure you may well agree, that it's at that hours of the night when domestic violence and all those other terrible things that do happen in our community that we're becoming more and more aware of tend to unfold. And people actually, rather than being fobbed off on the phone by South Australian Police when you ring them up, and that does happen, and that's been conveyed to the police on many occasions through Neighbourhood Watch, that you don't get treated well in terms of customer service, you get fobbed off quite often. You at least have the opportunity to go to the police station and seek service and a face-to-face and a humane way of dealing with these ghastly things that tend to happen after hours. If this was to close, then you are denied that opportunity. Or even to take refuge. If you flee your house and somebody is actually going to actually cause you harm, at least you've got somewhere to go. The other thing, Mr. Mayor, is that's come to my attention that there may be some grooming of the Sturt Police Station in terms of bringing this about, to reduce their stats. I've heard reports that in the wee hours of the night, the lights are turned off down there. It may well be that it might not be such a sinister thing. It may be some people wanting to have a kip. But the reality is that the community think that there's nobody there, and guess what? They go to Christie's Beach or into the city, and therefore their stats are dropped.
Okay. And is that motion seconded? Councillor Pryor. Mr. Speaker.
Yeah, just quickly, I agree with my co-councillor. Safety rates up there with one of the most important factors around the community. People love living in Marion because of the safety. So I think closing the police station for those after hours will have an adverse effect on that. So I disagree with the closures.
Question?
Councillor Lisker, or speaking against the motion?
Look, I think it's important that our residents feel safer, and I can understand that by thinking that there's a police station nearby, we are going to feel safer. But unfortunately, and I think I can see the point about having somewhere to go to refuge, but there are other places people can go for refuge if they need it late at night. I guess the concern is that the crimes, the criminals are not going to...
Point of order.
Point of order, Councillor Holt.
Does the member have anything to declare in terms of his political affiliations?
It's not relevant. There's no point of order. Keep going, Councillor Valeska.
The crime that... The way, and I remember when I was working for a certain member of parliament, they said that crime is prevented not by the penalty, but by the likelihood of getting caught. That member of parliament now is our mayor. And it's the likelihood of getting caught that means that you're better off having the police out in the community. You're better off... People aren't doing the crimes at the police station. They are doing them out in the community. So we need to have the police out in the community. So we're probably better off, instead of a police officer sitting in a... late at night when a lot of the crimes will be happening, especially domestic violence, that police officer is out on the beat going and being able to respond. One more car, two more cars, being able to respond. If this motion, I would support it, if we'd actually asked for some of the evidence, if the motion was not to make any changes which will actually make our community less safe, then I'd be glad to support it. But this is just an attack, and it's an example of alliteration, it's an example of playing on people's fears, but not actually looking at the situation and the appropriate solution. So I would love there to be a police station open, but if it's a choice between those officers being in an office not doing very much or out in my community, and I can tell you what, I've had community members tell me a whole lot of horrible crimes and stuff that happens, and I'd rather be those police officers be out there in the community. They've got the opportunity, the stuff they deal with is mainly reports, and the reports can be done online and over the phone. So there's a lot of that administrative stuff that doesn't need to be done face-to-face. And I think we need to be careful of what criticisms we make of police officers, questioning their integrity. So I think that's important as well.
Is there anyone speaking in favour of the motion? Then I'll ask Councillor Hull to close the debate.
Mr Mayor, Councillor Valesco is peddling the same argument as the Assistant Commissioner on radio, and it's got holes in it. Mr Mayor, many of those police officers that work behind the counter are there for all sorts of reasons. It may be post-traumatic stress disorder, it may they have some physical limitation, and they deserve a place to go. They need our respect because they've been through that. And to actually suggest that we're actually going to move them out of the police stations and put them in cars, that is a nonsense. That is a nonsense. It's a bit like saying, well, all our people that are on work cover, well, you know, we're just going to put them to work, you know. That is a fact. Many of the police officers are there because they, for all sorts of reasons, have elected not to be patrol officers. And some of them are actually even civilians working in those police stations. Some of them are even volunteers. Police volunteers work at the Sturt Police Station. Now, if you're actually going to close it at night, then it's actually going to displace those police officers, and I'm not sure where they go. It's a matter for their police union, who I have been in contact with, and I won't misrepresent them, but I believe that they are watching our position with interest, and I'll say no more than that. But there's no intention here tonight to bring disrepute or disrespect to any police officers. In fact, it's more about...
Councillor, just a point of order or a bit of guidance, if you like. The closing of the debate is not an opportunity to extend the initial debate by 3 minutes. It's meant to be responding to points raised in the debate. So please consider that.
Well, Councillor Bolesky raised the issue of putting more people in cars. Now, I've addressed that, and I think I've done that convincingly. So, you know, that is an argument being peddled by the government that coincidentally happens to be the Labor Party, and I think that we as a community can see through that, and it's all about cost saving. It's all about saving dollars, and it's not in the community's interest, just like they're trying to save money in many other areas of their operations.
I put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? That's carried by majority. Right, we've got two more to deal with. Councillor Hull on page 306. Councillor Hull. Sorry, Councillor Westwood, you're drawing my attention to the time. Correct, it's 3:30, it's 9:30. I declare the meeting closed. It's 9:30, the meeting's closed.